That is the question, isn't it, folks? How much time do we have? This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. You're listening to Here We Stand. It's August 15th in this very strange year of 2021. Now, today, the title of the show is The War is Upon Us, Keeping the High Ground as the War Intensifies, Recent News and Views. As part of the show later, I'll be featuring an interview I just did a couple of days ago with Sarah Westall, an internationally syndicated program which is going viral all over the place. It gives you an update of things happening on the West Coast in the struggle to reclaim the earth. And that song, dating from the 1640s when the people of England overthrew the king and briefly established a republic, it shows us the enemy always stays the same. It's always a few guys wanting to own everything and looking at all of us as if we're just things to move around. Like, take this shot, put this muzzle on, and everyone is supposed to comply. The rule of law, common law, accountability, that's all out the window, folks. At least that's the kind of world they're trying to turn upside down on us. We are turning it back on its right feet. And that means the people governing themselves. That's the purpose of the show and the Republic of Kanata and the resistance. Republicofkanata.ca, murderbydecree.com. Before we get to that interview I did with Sarah later, which I know you'll find very informative, we are going to touch on a few things. And again, I want to draw people's attention. If you're new listening to the show, do the background reading at murderbydecree.com. It shows you how genocide is always presented as a public health measure. Missionaries on the west coast of Canada in the 1800s said, these people are sick. They're spreading TB to us rather than us to them, which actually happened. And so we have to put them in special places for public health reasons. Nazis said the same thing. We had to cleanse our society of diseased elements. And today, society is being divided into the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And guess what's going to happen to the latter? At least that's their plan. We have other plans. On a lighter note, though, approaching the whole issue, there was a funny item in the Vancouver Province newspaper. Now, I kid you not, this was the headline 2 days ago. The headline was that police dogs have been trained to sniff out the virus in people. Yes, believe it or not, a dog can do what medical science can't do, and that's isolate a virus and say, you definitely have this and not some other kind of flu. So your civil liberties now, folks, and your ability to keep free and walk about in life is going to depend on whether a dog likes you or not. If he sniffs something on you it doesn't like, bang, you're in an internment camp. Now, my question when I read that was, is that a joke? Or are the people crazy? Or is it simply yet another big lie slash big scare to get people all nervous and compliant? Well, don't forget, and ever since I've been a kid, I've loved studying societies that are collapsing. Like Europe in the 14th century when the Black Death hit and everyone was running around convinced the world was over and there were peasant rebellions and it was a great time because people were questioning everything. But what was really obvious when you look at societies that are collapsing, is their leaders, so-called leaders, make decisions that are increasingly crazy and self-destructive. And I think, like in nature, when animals are selected, naturally selected to survive over others, we live in a cultural environment now, and there's certain cultural selective qualities that happen. And that is people in a psychotic culture who are running the show become increasingly crazy because that is a selected feature. It means this society is going to collapse that much quicker. The health of the planet requires that that society that's so destructive collapses quicker. So its leaders go crazy and make very silly and stupid and contradictory decisions all the time. Well, you just have to look around what's going on now, folks, and you see that happening. Now, of course, that's their problem, not ours. Sovereignty happens on three levels. Our answer to that is our own personal, political, and spiritual sovereignty. We've talked about these three a lot on this program. And again, we want your feedback. Write to me, angelfire101 at protonmail.com for any thoughts about the show today. But we've talked about that principle, personal, political, spiritual sovereignty. Personal sovereignty is where it begins. It simply says you see yourself as your own governing identity. You don't look to your identity through something or someone else, as we've all been raised to do. And from that sense of personal space and really separation from this slave-based society, we find that a political strategy flows out of that, and that is we can govern ourselves. For example, in Canada, we passed laws last September almost a year ago now that said COVID measures are banned in our country, in our republic. You're not allowed to mask or distance or quarantine or take the shot. That's against our law. And we say that to the police all the time. Sorry, we're not in your jurisdiction. We're under our own lawful jurisdiction because we've formed common law assemblies, republic assemblies, and we pass our own laws now and enforce them. That's what self-governance means. And really today in Canada, especially Canada, we have to do this because the country is collapsing. As you'll hear in this interview I do a bit later in the show with Sarah Westall, China is effectively governing certainly the West and more of the entire country. And there won't be a Canada around. We're going to be a simple appendage and colony of China. And we have to replace that with something else. There won't be a Canadian system. We have to create it on the ground. That's the importance of the Republic and the revival of the dream of our ancestors. And my great-great-great-grandfather, Philip Annett, who took part in the rebellion in 1837 in Ontario that tried to overthrow the crown. We are reviving that vision of our ancestors, our patriotic ancestors. And that's what this movement is really all about. But the third dimension of sovereignty isn't political or personal. It's spiritual. It's understanding that we live in a separate reality, that the so-called illusion, the illusory society on which we know in our heart doesn't actually have substance. It's based on lies and persecution and fear. And that has no substance. There is one substance and one real thing in the universe, and that's love. And I don't mean that as a sentiment. I mean that as a higher reality that guides us and guides all of our life. And I learned that, you know, when you give birth to your own children and watch them come into the world, you recognize that that's the case. And that celestial love that Jesus called agape, that is what really governs us. And their power, so-called power, can't touch us because it rests totally on our compliance. Nothing is ever done to us. We cooperate. And so in many ways, what's going on with this whole COVID police state hysteria is simply blowback. We have caused this ourselves. We have created a global culture resting on the mass murder and genocide of many people. And the tools we use to control them are now turning around and biting us in the ass. And so as Sun Tzu says, the most important thing is whoever knows himself and knows his enemy will win every battle. And when I say know yourself, it isn't just at the individual level that we've all been raised to think at. Know yourselves, plural. Know what you are part of. Know the culture. And in that sense, and I want to just make a couple of more points before we go to the interview. Go to my book, the latest book I wrote, Memoirs of a Revolutionary. And it really is looking at political history and spiritual history over the last 50 years since 1971. And when I really began to get involved for the first time at age 15 in politics and the whole struggle to change the world, make it better, I learned then that life is a series of deaths and a series of changes, and we have to stay open to the changes happening through us. Otherwise, we've become part of the problem very quickly. And one of the things I discuss in the book is how the present COVID police state is so much modeled on the system brought in by corporatism or Nazi and Italian fascism. And there's five aspects of that system they set up, which is still operating today. First of all, whether it's in the death camps of Europe or today in the corporatized society, there's five things you've got to watch for. First of all, the population is legally disenfranchised and made stateless. We have no basic rights. That's what happened. All of a sudden, the news media said, hey, guess what? You can't assemble anymore. You have no rights. We've taken them away from you. The second thing, so, you know, the rights, you're made stateless and rightless, part of the way to make yourself feel helpless. Second thing is that there's a state bureaucracy operating completely impersonally. There's no human contact with it. Try contacting the courts or any kind of system and you'll see what happens. An impersonal bureaucracy is running it. Thirdly, the slave population is physically and psychologically dominated by saying there's no possibility of escape. You cannot escape what's coming down on you, whether you're being herded into a camp or mentally herded and said, here's the next wave, the Delta wave coming down. You got to take the shot or you can't fly or blah, 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 blah. It's to make you feel there are no options. You're being watched all the time and there's no options. The fourth is, as a result of all this, the population regulate themselves into their own servitude. There aren't enough cops or soldiers in the world to police us. We have to police ourselves for the system to work. And finally, because of the self-policing, eventually we destroy ourselves. In Europe, people were loaded on the cattle cars by their own leaders. Bureaucratic self-destruction, whether you voluntarily line up for the shot, whether you abide by all these new police state measures, or you load yourself onto the cattle car to the death camp, it's all bureaucratic self-destruction. Now, it's really amazing how those five characteristics carry on over time. And again, all of these measures were justified in Europe and over here as a public health measure. And that's important to keep in mind. It's psychologically very brilliant because nobody wants to oppose something that could save other people's lives, right? It's appealing to that humanitarian impulse and also the fear of these unknown invisible bugs that can kill us. Well, here's a fact, folks. Ever since the beginning of this, I've been walking around totally the way I always have, without a muzzle, without anything on. I've never gotten sick once, and I move in very different kinds of circles, including people on the street who are very sick. I'm 65 with bronchial asthma. I should be sick by now. I'm not. In my real world, that says, well, it isn't the virus. I think there is something making people sick. Maybe it's a bioweapon. Who knows? We don't have enough information to know, but I'm just telling you, in reality, this thing doesn't seem to exist. The people that are getting sick for many other reasons, but let's not put it down to a virus. Let's not insult my intelligence. All right. Now, I know I made my father mad there. Hi, Dad. I know you're listening, but we'll talk about it. Yes, here we are. We've got about another 8 minutes before the interview, and I want to make another really important point. That one of the things we looked at when we tried to form our assemblies was the need to assert our own sovereignty. And we had a brilliant example of how this whole thing happened and then got taken down on Vancouver Island, which, of course, is a primary target of the Chinese takeover. Not accidentally, all five of our republic assemblies we formed there were all wiped out in a two-month period. And it always happened the same way. Right after we passed the laws that banned COVID measures, we told people they had to enforce those measures. And immediately people got cold feet and just couldn't do it. Now, the problem there wasn't police operatives. It wasn't threats being issued, although that happened. The problem was the people themselves. They couldn't break out of the dependency and the fear that they could take the power into their own hands. And that, I think, is really the key to this whole thing is that, like, whoever it was, Horatio said in the play Hamlet, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. We have to look in the mirror. That's how we go deep, by first looking in the mirror and asking ourselves, why won't we take our own power back? Why won't we enforce these laws we pass and say to the system, bugger off, we are governing ourselves. Now, one of the things to overcome in all this is the fact that we are hit right away by the reality that we're facing really a cybernetic organism that is trying to absorb us into itself. And that cybernetic organism, that one machine that the system is trying to get everybody to serve, is really embodied in that mask. And I've got this really interesting quote from a guy called Elias Canetti, who wrote a book called Crowds and Power in 1961. A really brilliant book. It shows really about group psychology and how people think as a group. And he wrote this about a mask. He says, quote, a human face is understandable, but a mask is not. It is a conclusion, a separating of the living from the dead. Once the mask is in position, there can be no more beginning and no groping towards something new. It is fixed. The thing cannot change. Above all, the mask separates. Its power derives from the fact that what it covers is never known, like a symbol of what every ruler desires, the anonymous mystery of absolute power that hides the tyrant's real intent. Bingo. When everyone dons the mask, you're acting like the ruler, because behind every ruler lies, because they have to create a dissembling appearance to hide their real motives. That's how a few govern the many. So once everyone puts on the mask, they're sharing in the lie. They're sharing in the cover-up. They're identifying with this maskless system that lies routinely and tells you to believe that black is white and two equals five. But remember what this character Winston Smith said in 1984, freedom means the ability to know that 2 + 2 = 4, to know that your own mind and your own reason can see you through all of the lies. So it's interesting because, like any paranoiac, a ruler has to continually lie to avoid being unmasked. And by enrolling all of us in the same deception, we prevent us from unmasking him, because now we all have the same disguise. We have the same vested interest in the ruler's lies. So people, it's interesting because people who initially hated wearing a mask will often be seen clinging to it to their face constantly, because they have become the official lie. They fear becoming naked. They don't know any other identity now than the mask. Well, that is something indicating the deeper issue going on here. It isn't just a police state. It isn't about a corporatocracy wanting to make billions through its big pharma cartels. Yes, of course, that all goes on. And we've had proof over and over that that is the case now. But there's something deeper, a very spiritual, fundamental level going on. We are reaping a whole corporate culture that we have created. We're reaping the consequences. And so to really resist this, you cannot. The reason those people couldn't enforce the laws and step out of the system and cause the assembly to collapse and even turned on us and got hostile is because they were part of the thing that they fought. They hadn't broken from it internally. And that's the key, to step away internally. Like Gandhi said, if you don't have spiritual sovereignty first, you'll never have political independence from the empire. And just look at India today, replicating all the sins of the British Empire because they hadn't that inner freedom first. And that's what we first have to work on. So that's kind of a good overview, I think, into what we're going to talk about, because I never like to pigeonhole any of this or me onto one issue, whether it's Republic of Canada or genocide in Canada or any of that. It all is merging together. It's all showing that we are engaged in a multi-life stream struggle to reclaim the soul of humanity. And that soul is under attack now, not just under attack, it has a death sentence on it. And unless we all take that personal responsibility and the political and the spiritual sovereignty, and that's an active thing, not verbal, but active every day, unless we reclaim that, we won't have a future and neither will our children. It's very likely that in 10 years, if we carry on this path, it will not be a human race. There'll be components of a machine. And we will not let that happen. We will not go gently into that night. We will fight to the end on this. I hope you share this belief with me. That's why we're here every week. This is not for the faint-hearted. This show is designed to arm you in every way possible to not only resist, but do like the diggers did in 1649, reclaim the earth for all people, because it doesn't belong to one group or one person. It belongs to all of the people, and as do our minds, as do our souls, as do everything. That's the basis of our resistance, the creation of that new society. Again, republicofcanada.ca, murderbydecree.com, and angelfire101@protonmail.com. And as a final plug, don't forget, I am on tour in August and September across Turtle Island, otherwise known as North America. Disregarding borders, disregarding fears, creating our own reality, I will be giving workshops and talks and readings for my book, working with all of you. Contact me. angelfire101@protonmail.com. We'll arrange meetings. For now, listen to my interview with Sarah Westall and our final closing song, which is also very appropriate, as you'll see. This is Kevin Annan, Eagle Strong Voice. Carry it on. Stay strong.
Hi, Kevin. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Good to be back, as always.
Yeah, I love it when you're here. You always have such great information to share with people. You are being vindicated recently because I know how much you went through of being just completely smeared for telling the truth about the wiping out of the Native Americans' culture and just the abuses they went through. So how do you feel? I know it's bittersweet, obviously. It's not great, but all this stuff that's being acknowledged now as far as the mass graves with these schools. What is going on with that?
Well, personally, it feels like there's so much that's been lost by people, my death of my friends, destruction of my life and my family. I mean, the loss is so great that it's hard to have any sense of kind of victory, you know?
Yes.
Vindication, though, is important because it shows people that, and not only is this stuff being true that I've been saying for 25 years, but they have to bury the memory of how this all came out even more now, because if our movement was proven right, then think of all the people who have egg on their face, from the government and the churches, the media, academics, all the people who systematically ignored this for years are now pretending they didn't, right? So it really causes a huge credibility gap again in the system, which is why they try to bury things continually. Like, here's an example of how ludicrous it's getting. The other day, there was a rally of, you know, concerned people in Ottawa, in the nation's capital, and they called for an inquiry into Indian residential schools. Well, not only have there been three or four inquiries over the last 20 years, but the government themselves did their own spin and whitewash operation called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission for 7 years, till 2015. And even New York Times reported the report of this truth and, you know, this whitewash, where they weren't even allowed to talk about the deaths of children or mass graves. And yet somehow that's been wiped out of people's memories. You know, that effectively, they can suddenly reinvent history as if there's never been an inquiry done into residential schools.
They're right? Really good at reinventing history, right? Very, as we're much. Utilizing. And go ahead.
It's like Orwell come true. We're living through it. And whether it's the technology now, the ability to swab memory and people's thinking, whatever it is, you have to, a lot of my work is continually, educating people about the real history and the real hard evidence of these mass murders that are carrying on today.
Yeah. And there's so much that we're going through right now where a lot of people are being confronted with the ugly reality. And I think the shutdown really woke a lot of people up. And now there's still the issue with the vaccine that people are being confronted with. But, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this whole colonization fact that they go in, they wipe out groups of people, and then they gloss over history and do propaganda all at the same time. It's a pattern of colonization, and they don't even think twice about it. It's so amazing, though, that it's so easily to manipulate the media structure. I'm still so confused at how easy it is to manipulate people.
Well, you know, it isn't too hard to understand when you look at how for several decades now, and actually I talk about this, my latest book, which I'll plug, it's called Memoirs of a Revolutionary. You can get it on Amazon. But in it, I span the last 50 years. I look at what's happened in the world since the 1970s. And not only has corporate power so concentrated that it's now, you know, governments are redundant. They just, as you can see by all the politicians lining up to push vaccinations, they just jump to the whip of the corporatocracy, right? Which really is running the world now. And previously the system needed the semblance of democracy. No more. I mean, there's just this corporate fascist model of you will obey. You know, here's a perfect example. One of my friends, Suzanne Holland, she's a native activist up in British Columbia. She, the Chilcotin people who she works for, the Chilcotin Nation, they issued eviction orders to the churches, to the Mounties, to the government to get off their land. Suzanne was picked up, charged with some minor offense. She didn't go into their court because she doesn't recognize it. So they issued a failure to appear warrant. She's been under house arrest for a year and a half. She can't leave her home. She can't make phone calls. She can't even email people, you know, who are targeted as being her friends. And they've got her locked away as a prisoner, right? And they can do that in Canada because we've always had this history of rule by decree, where a few people in Ottawa, you know, in the old colonial system, they'll issue an order and it becomes law. It's never debated in parliament, never issued by a court. It's just a few people running it. And that's the corporate model. A few people determine the law and everybody has to go along. So this whole tradition of, you know, accountability and you know, the U.S. Constitution, whole, you know, it's suddenly out the window in practice. And we live in a whole new system now. And that's what it's hard for people to get their mind around that when, you know, we tend to operate from what we've known in our life. And yet this is a really radical change that's happened.
And I think you're right. I think in the United States, we still have some remnants that are fighting and maybe we have a shot, but I think Canada's really, you guys are really in that system. We just talked about this before I went on air. There's a empire that used to be, look at the old maps, called Tartaria. And then it's all wiped out. There's no history of it. I've been doing a lot of research on it. And any listeners, I did a show on it a couple years ago, and I'm more interested in it. Because I'm very curious of how there were empires during, you know, throughout the time, not even just empires, there's groups and civilizations that I think were wiped out and colonized, and then they just wiped out their history. And I think the globalists, if you will, they're used to doing that, and they don't care. Now, we had a Smith Month Act in the United States back in 2012 that Obama approved under his presidency that allows them to do propaganda against the people. I think that was preparing for them to be able, for this time frame of being able to get us prepped, change the history, do whatever you need to do so that the people go along with your agenda. And I mean, that's what we're seeing. In order to have a free people, you can't have propaganda. It can't be legal. You can't lie to people knowingly.
Oh yeah, that's Thomas Jefferson's old quote about if it's a choice between having a free government and a free press, you have to go for the free press, because if people aren't informed, they're slaves, right?
That's absolutely right. And that's what I think we're seeing. And I'm just concerned that we are in the process of being eliminated, just like what you recognized and what you were showing with the Native Americans. I'm really concerned that they're doing an operation to do the same thing with us.
Very much. I mean, as I often say, mandatory vaccinations have been the law in Canada since 1874 when it comes to Indians on reservations. You can't refuse a shot in the arm or medical treatment or you go to jail. So these laws are always on the books. They're just applied selectively, but now they're being applied generally to all of us. And part of that, of course, is wiping out memory. I remember when I was studying anthropology, there was a few unorthodox books on the history in North America. Of what had happened. And there were a number of native settlements that were actual cities. There was a place in Kentucky, I think it's called Cahokia. It was a city of thousands of native people. And yet it's been wiped out of the memory because when you're conquering an area, the whole line of the missionaries was, these are uncivilized people who don't have writing. They don't have our civilization. We have to raise them up. So any evidence of an advanced culture in North America was just wiped out of the archaeological record, and the people were exterminated. So it's part of the whole, you know, how you take over an area. But now we're all being colonized again. It's the same, and ultimately eliminated. I think, of course, that's the agenda.
Well, and let's see if they get away with it now that we have at least, the internet and some abilities to fight back with. It's all the freedom of press that keeps us free. And we got to fight this to the end. But you're seeing stuff with China, new developments on the whole West Coast that leads to, more of a ramp up of what we're talking about. What are you seeing there?
It's getting worse by the day. Give you an example. For people who don't know this, the Trudeau government, the first thing they did when they came in a few years ago was brought in legislation removing all limits on Chinese investment. They buy up the whole country now if they want. Also, they brought in the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which allows China to actually station troops on Canadian soil. Now, this is mostly in British Columbia on the West Coast, where China announced this year that they're going to switch their economy from coal-based to liquid natural gas. And most of that LNG is in British Columbia and along what's called the Highway of Tears, where so many native families go missing. And that's not accidental. They're being terrorized off their land by Chinese death squads, RCMP working with them to do that, and to grab the LNG. The native puppet chiefs are important to this. The Nisga'a Nation, which is in northern British Columbia, they just announced a $55 billion deal with China to provide liquid natural gas. So it's the native puppet leaders who are part of this whole Chinese takeover. Yeah. And that's connected very much with the attacks we faced when we tried to set up sovereign republic assemblies on Vancouver Island and on the West Coast. Every single one of them was wiped out, destroyed from within. The usual kind of divide and conquer smear tactics, scaring people away. And like I said, my friend Suzanne Holland, who works for the sovereign nation of the Chilcotin people, she's now under house arrest on a bogus charge. So anyone advocating sovereignty and people governing themselves is targeted now, because that's the last thing the Chinese government can have in this area, where they're going to just basically enslave the whole population to grab the resources. I mean, we see it unfolding as we speak right now.
Well, I know that in the United States, there's a portion that actually crosses over the Mexican border, the Indian land, and they're using the native lands. They're using that to freely bring in resources into the United States through that Indian land. And, what is going on there? Do you have any intel on that, or is it more based on the Canadian West Coast that you have?
No, it's really common. You find that all across the U.S. Canadian border, like around Cornwall, Ontario, and New York, the Mohawk, their tribe, their land traditionally spans the border because a lot of them were driven after the American Revolution. They made the mistake of siding with the British, so the Washington drove them up into Canada. But they still had people there, so their reservation spans the border. It's one of the hottest areas for human and drug trafficking because you can often, even after 9/11, people with a native status card could cross the border without even a passport. And so a lot of criminality goes on, like the Blackfoot in the West. Anywhere where there's a nation that spans the border, you get that criminality going on. You know, the biggest casino in America is actually owned by the Seneca Indians in New York. There's big criminal element involved in the native world. And of course, that's something that's never reported because the government, churches, others who had their hands dirty with genocide rely on those native leaders to cover up the crime, like they're doing now with the mass graves. They go in, they pretend to do a dig, they destroy all the evidence, and they make themselves look good. Oh, we're looking into the missing children finally. It's all the same kind of concealment, so the crime can continue.
It's worse because they're going in and destroying the evidence. So they're destroying the lives, or they're destroying the memories of these children by destroying that evidence. Yeah. So the fact that they're going in lying and claiming they're doing something and then destroying those graves is probably the biggest disrespect you can give to a people.
Well, it's a crime under the law, you know, tampering with a crime scene, destroying evidence. Covering up a crime is as serious as doing the crime itself. You know, mm-hmm. You hide a murder weapon, you're just as guilty as the guy who pulled the trigger. So that's what's going on in a huge way. And I say to people often, do we really feel for those children in the ground? You know how they got there? The torture and murder that put them in the ground. Imagine you doing that to little children. It really often newborns were taken into these places and just wiped out. We've got testimonies of people who said they saw children, newborn babies thrown into furnaces. Murderbydecree.com, it's all up there, right? So part of the horror of that causes people to pull back mentally and just deny it all, of course, or do little gestures like, you know, putting the shoes of children on the steps of churches, right, as a remembrance. Those safe little things are allowed, but who's going to be prosecuted? How are we going to stop these crimes? That's never talked about, right?
Yeah, and I think it's really important. I don't trust these people, so I think they'll use the American Indian or the Native Americans' plight as a reason, as a way to colonize us and divide us. And, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter. And, I mean, these people's lives do matter, and we're trying to do it legitimately. But let's honor their memory and make sure that these kind of colonizational crimes, where you go and you wipe out groups of people, don't ever happen again. That's how you honor their memory, not by using them as see how bad we are and using it as a way to murder and hurt right. more people. And I think that's what they're doing.
I agree. That's really important what you just said, because everything is often designed to divide people even more. That's how a few people rule the many. You get everybody to fight each other, right? It's simple. And it's played out so often in history that I'm amazed that people don't learn more. That's why I think in school they make history boring. They make people hate the study of history, because if you really understood, you know, our history, we understand the present. You got to know where we came from to know the system we're in now.
Exactly. And we just aren't teaching. And that's why I say I'm continually amazed at how little people are aware of what's going on, especially now. Yeah. There was a Rockefeller thing written back in the 1800s, I think 1860 or something, that said that it talked about how they wanted to wipe out and recolonize this area. And the people that saw what was going on were going to be considered insane by those that were following along. They actually said that, and they talked about it. And so people like us who are acknowledging these things and trying to point it out look insane to them. Until it's too late, obviously. And then they realize that we weren't insane. But that's part of the struggle, right? Is that they know this is the phenomena that we're up against.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your thing about Rockefeller reminded me in the early 20th century, Rockefeller funded what was called the General Education Board. And it was a big endowment for all the universities and the education system. And it basically reoriented education in America away from, you know, traditional liberal arts where you taught people how to think and critically analyze things, to the manual and practical trades. Because Rockefeller said, I don't want workers who think, I want workers who work.
Workers that do.
And that whole, so that kind of reoriented the people away from traditionally before public schooling, there was a higher literacy rate in America than after. So it's quite funny, you know?
Well, that does make sense. And how to get, and the management staff or the people who rise up and manage the society are the ones who can critically think and think broader. But the workers, you need, they believe, and I'm not going to say you need this, they believe that that's what they want. But now to have a free and open society where we manage ourselves, we need more critical thinkers. We need people. So it goes completely against the free society.
Yeah, and I think people naturally do think critically, right? That's the point. Like, look at, you know, when you watch little kids, right? The so-called terrible twos and threes, which I, with my daughters, I love them when they're that age because their whole mind was opening up, right? And they always say, why? Why, Daddy? Why? Why? You know, and talk to an adult today, and do you see any of them going, why? Why do we have to wear these things? Why? You know, no, it's just driven out through the fear of a parental authority figure, right? Like of whether it's the state or the church or whoever. You can't think your thoughts. You've got to think our thoughts. I mean, that's the whole plan, right?
Well, little kids are funny. I mean, you leave it to the little kids to tell the truth. I mean, they just look at things so literally, like they call the UPS truck, you know, the UPS. It took me a while to figure out when they're calling the UPS truck. What's the UPS? Oh, the UPS. Or, you know, my daughter used to go through and she wants beef bread. You know, she wanted a roast beef sandwich, but it's beef and it's bread, you know? I mean, it's just like...
Call it for what it is. Right.
Yeah. It's funny. You got to kind of have to reorientate your thinking to figure out what the hell, what? Yep, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. But yeah, they'll tell you like it is. Even they'll insult you without knowing it. And so if you want the truth, you ask a little kid.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I agree that there's so much study to show that we, as we grow up, we lose our creativity. You know, we start out with kids being very creative and slowly we lose that.
Well, it's also very much related to think of, since World War II, like the last three quarters of a century, we've been bombarded our brains with deliberate techniques to not only dumb people down, but the whole, what they've learned with the whole internet and iPad technology is that it actually restructures the way people think so that they're very focused on the left brain analytical, which is the easiest part of the brain to control. But the other creative side of intuition and imagination and all of that is suppressed, deliberately suppressed. So I think I mentioned last time there was this teacher who did an interview with children at a kindergarten in New York a few years ago. And she asked them what they daydreamed about. And the children didn't know what daydreaming was, right?
Oh, geez.
Because they're so focused at a young age on the analytical, they equate information with knowledge, which it isn't.
No,
you know, knowledge comes from all sorts of places in us, intuitive and, you know, the unconscious and all sorts. But all of that is suppressed because that part can't be controlled as easily. This the analytical side can be. And so we have to recover that whole part of us that, you know, has been under assault for so long.
Well, they've studied how to control, you know, the psychology of the human mind for decades. You know, they had the CIA, had the MK Ultra, and then the Marnik program and all those different programs. Yeah. But what they've learned in those programs, they're now implementing on the masses. And, you know, it's not they're doing limited trauma torture. It's not like with the children where they did this horrifying trauma torture, but they're doing trauma and that kind of stuff to us in the masses. I mean, what we just went through was trauma. Yeah. What they do to the children was trauma. The face masks is a trauma-based conditioning. And it's not quite what they went through, but they know it works on many, many people because they spent decades perfecting it.
Well, you know, the thing is about human beings is we're unpredictable. We react in different ways. We can't, ultimately, we can't be controlled. And that's why their measures are so oppressive and dictatorial, because they have to do that to control people because they're a weak situation. They're in a very vulnerable situation, the minority yes. who are trying to inflict this, because it's waking up a lot of people as to there's a number being done on us, right? And their whole notion of government being benevolent and the medical community trying to help us, all of that is out the window, right?
Nobody believes it that has a brain. And that's why I was saying anybody who still can't see through it, I'm amazed. Like at the beginning where I say, I just can't believe that people can't see. There are people who have cognitive dissonance. They can't handle the truth, right? Yeah. But the rest of the people, and I think they played their cards too much. And so all these people are waking up and saying, what the heck? We might be a little too far for them yet, but I'm getting, I can't tell you how many more people are listening to what I'm putting out there and following my work. And more people are talking about what is going on. Just like you are now starting to be vindicated. But the important thing is for us to use this in a way to not be colonized and for them not to win. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And it's taken a step from being aware of a problem with creating an alternative. And that's the stumbling block for a lot of people, because we haven't ever been raised in a situation of real self-governance, right? We defer authority to somebody else. We mark a ballot. We pay our taxes. You know, there was a funny thing that happened after World War II. This term consumer came in to the culture, right? Before that, people were producers. Farming families, people who work. We produce wealth. We have a sense that we have the power. We are important in society. When you become a consumer, you're this idle, mindless mouth that's just taking in all the time, right? And psychologically, that makes people slaves. We got to recover the notion that we can govern our own lives. And that's why we try to set up these assemblies and courts where people in their own neighborhoods and communities take back that power. So I should plug our other website, republicofkanata.ca, because that's our movement where we're trying to do exactly that in Canada. And of course, there's a lot of allies in America and that whole struggle too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think more and more groups need to come together and unite and realize this is a uniting factor. It's not a left, right? It's who wants freedom and who doesn't. I mean, who's okay with being a slave and who's not? Who's okay with being colonized and who's not? I mean, it's just really basic. And they still want to force us into that old paradigm, but it's just not the paradigm we're living in. You also have a tour that you're going on. Can you talk about this tour? I am so impressed and I'm so happy that you just don't give up and that you are a fighter that you are. And so many people, they need to hear you speak and they need to help and do what you're doing. We need more of you.
Well, that's why we're going on the road. Different levels. I'm going to be, of course, reading from my books and doing lectures on all this, but also holding organizing workshops for the people who, and there are many of them, there are more people every day who actually want to do something within our republic, but even more broadly as well. And so we'll be holding actual training workshops and other events. I'm also working on a sequel to our documentary, Unrepentant, which really forced out the truth of this in 2007, just before the official apology for the residential schools. And so I'll be going all across Canada and all then down into the States, where I've got a lot of invitations to come and speak. So, it's a way to often say to people, I'm not an organizer. You people have to organize yourselves. I'm a catalyst. I'm a spark. Yes. I've got a memory and experience, which is important. We have to understand how it's possible to force out the change we have, including forcing, you know, the Bishop of Rome to step down in 2013.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
But, you know, it works. The methods we've used works. And so I want to share that with people. And, you know,
I'm hoping your next documentary not only exposes the truth, but also helps people understand, like what we said before, helps people understand how this is a pattern and we can't allow it to happen again. People are people, and any group can be destroyed, and you know you can't do that to fellow human beings.
That's right. It's a chance for, there was a great phrase Martin Luther King used to use about injecting a new meaning into the veins of civilization, or Lincoln said a new birth of freedom, that phrase from Gettysburg Address. I mean, it's an opportunity. There's all these horrible things, but it's an opportunity now for us to use that as a catapult into a new kind of society, a new spirit, a way where we reclaim our humanity. And that's the brilliance, the opportunity of this moment that people need to seize, right?
Absolutely. Is that this is what we have done in the past, but that doesn't mean we have to do it in the future. And that's why I don't like the critical race theory, because it's like we're just dwelling in the past instead of saying, wait a minute. Right. We don't like what happened to so many people in the past. So let's not do it going into the future. We have more slaves now than we ever had in the past. Mm-hmm. And we have to realize that. We have to come to grips with the fact that, and it's not in the, it's not like open slaves like they think of it. It's slaves in all around the world and all these children that are being trafficked. And it's the underbelly of criminality that's coming from the cabal that's running our society that is enslaving people.
Well, I think, people, they know their system is falling apart. The hard reality is that people enslave themselves ultimately, you know, it doesn't matter what statutes they pass, you know, you have to do this, have to get a shot. If people say no, what can they do? They don't have the manpower to enforce that on millions of people. So people have to enforce it on themselves. And that's the danger, that people do that. Once we declare that independence, they have no power over us at all. Right.
Yeah. And the more we wake people up, the less power they'll have, because more people will be, hell no, I don't want that. I don't want my children to have that. Get away. So this is good. A lot of people think we're winning. And I do think that right now they're scrambling and they don't, that's why we're seeing such crazy, irrational behavior.
It's true. You know, people always assume, and this is an idea bred deliberately from a young age, that the people in power are the wisest, the most caring, they're virtuous. In fact, it's the opposite. How do you get to any high position in any corporation? By screwing somebody else. Government, the church, the military, they're all the same way. The people on top are the craziest, because somebody like Bill Gates, I remember watching him in a news conference. Actually, he was testifying before Congress and he had his arms around himself and he was rocking like this, like the classic abused child self-medication posture, right? Yes. And these people are very messed up, right? And we need to just turn away from them, right? And take back the power into ourselves.
Yeah. And I think the people who are capable of running those things up onto, they self-select not to do it because they don't want to be part of that environment. And we've self-selected to check out for so long that now all we have are those people on top.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we can change that. We can change that.
We have to change that. Well, okay. How do they see you on your tour?
Well, first of all, you should write to me, angelfire101 at protonmail.com. Now, of course, like we experienced, my emails will end up in the spam file. So I'll give you a number as well to phone, 236-380-4508, 236-380-4508. Call me and I will come and we'll make a booking and I'll come to wherever people would like me to come. But, I'll be traveling.
Is that a Canadian? Hold on. Is that a Canadian number or is it just like, okay. So do you have to use a Canadian code to get through?
Yeah, I have to use a one. It's one before any number in America or Canada.
Okay, because I tried to get through with that number and I was having some issues. So check it.
That's the cell phone. But I would also, write to me and designate exactly the kinds of things that you would like me to speak on, because I can do a whole gamut of things, not only in the genocide and the crimes, the movement to set up a republic, what it means. The common law training workshops are some of our most successful meetings because it's giving power back into people's hands, right?
Okay. Well, absolutely. Excellent. And you have a show every Sunday, right? Are you going to still run it, do your shows while you're doing your tour?
Oh, yeah. On the road. I'm often interviewing people, like today at 6 p.m. Eastern, so 5 p.m. Central. On our show, we have two people calling from Europe. And one of them, Eva, works in a sister organization there. And they're going to be talking about the massive resistance now building in France. The president of France just announced that you're not going to be able to vote unless you get the shot.
Oh, my gosh. So
this is like outrageous. And there's a movement to just overthrow this bastard, you know, and stop this. Right.
So anyway, it's just incredible. Well, I've heard that in France, I mean, they're kind of leading them charge in a lot of ways. They're putting guillotines in front of government buildings. And I mean, they're just sending them. Yeah, I love that. They're just sending the message. Hey, guys, we are on to you.
Yeah, well, you don't mess with the French. I mean, it's like even in Canada, French Canada, like in Quebec, they had 100,000 people in the streets objecting to the lockdown. You get maybe 500 in English Canada. But, you know, there's that French notion that, like, again, they came out of a revolution like Americans, right? Like, we govern ourselves, right? We're recovering that idea, you know?
That's excellent. So thank God for the French. And hopefully they'll lead a lot and people will look at them as a symbol of what to do. So excellent. And thank you. Where can they hear your radio show?
It's BBS Radio. So it's bbsradio.com /Here We Stand. One word. That's the name of the show. And again, murderbydecree.com gives you all the books, all the links, and republicofkanata.ca, K-A-N-A-T-A.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Thanks for everything. Thanks for sticking with this for 25 years. I mean, you are, gosh, it's so great to have you, especially in this time. So thanks for everything.
Well, it's why I'm here. You discover your purpose through adversity, right?
You do. It's quite crazy. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sarah.